Hello, my friends. I want to show you some footage taken from outside a Jewish synagogue in the city of Vaughan, just north of Toronto, over the weekend. A Hamas hate march actually assaulted a police officer. A woman was arrested, but then pulled free by the rest of the mob, and they were all allowed to go. It's two-tier policing. We've got the video to prove it to you. But first, let me invite you to become a subscriber to Rebel News Plus. That's the video version of this podcast. I want you to see the footage, so I need you to have the video version. Go to rebelnewsplus.com, click subscribe. It's $8 a month. And not only do you get great content, but you help keep Rebel News alive and strong because we take no money from Trudeau. That's rebelnewsplus.com. All right, here's today's show. Tonight, violent street gangs rule the roost in Toronto. It's March 4th, and this is the Ezra Levant Show.
Shame on you, you censorious thug.
I don't know if you remember, but the first time Justin Trudeau and Giorgia Meloni, the leader of Italy, met, he thought he would scold her because she wasn't sufficiently LGBTQ2SL plus enough. You know, he likes to mansplain those things. He'll never say that to Xi Jinping or the head of a Muslim country where homosexuality is actually criminalized, but he'll give a lecture to Giorgia Meloni because she's conservative, or at least slightly conservative. He humiliated her. I think it backfired because I don't think anyone in Italy cares at all about what Justin Trudeau says or thinks. And I think it made him look like he always looks, which is very thin-skinned when it comes to criticism from women, whether it's Jody Wilson-Raybould or Tamara Leach. I think Justin Trudeau has a real problem with criticism from strong women. It's sort of embarrassing for him, not for Meloni. Well, for some reason, Giorgia Meloni thought that she would try again. I'm not sure quite why, but she did agree to meet with Justin Trudeau, and they were having an event at the Royal Ontario Museum. And she's a world leader, member of a G7 country, a NATO ally, and he blew it. I guess at least this time he didn't invite a Nazi SS officer like he did when Vladimir Zelensky came to town. But there was a massive street protest outside, and not just a street protest. I call it a hate march. It was people dressed as Hamas thugs, masks, and they actually had signs with machine guns. I think that this is probably rubbing up against the line of facilitating or instructing or harboring terrorists. I don't know, but no one's certainly being charged with that. Despite the massive support for terrorists in the streets, Justin Trudeau himself was asked very early on what he thinks about these hate marches, and he said he was fine with them. But he couldn't even maintain control of the event. It was unprofessional operationally. I don't know who would be to blame for that. I think at the end, it comes down to the Prime Minister's office, which has the power to, you know, have high security for G7 leaders, working with different police forces, the RCMP in particular, but also city police forces. They do this all the time. I know it sounds insane, but Justin Trudeau is just so rogue these days. It wouldn't surprise me if this was something he did on purpose. I know that sounds so outlandish, and I don't think I would have said that until recently, but everything to Justin Trudeau is a photo op or some sort of emotional outburst. So maybe it was just incompetence, or maybe it was sort of one of those, uh-oh, whoopsie, on purpose incompetences. I don't know. But it certainly set the tone for the weekend when short hours later, there was another Hamas hate march, not this time in front of two G7 leaders who were meeting, but rather in a synagogue north of Toronto. A synagogue is a house of worship. It's a Jewish place. It has no more to do with the state of Israel than a church has to do with Switzerland, even though the Swiss flag is a Christian cross, or the flag of Norway, or more than a dozen flags have a cross on them. But I think people know that going to a church and protesting at a Christian church because it has a cross, that's not how you protest against, allegedly, your concerns about a country. But of course, they're concerns of these Hamas hate marches, like Hamas itself, it's not for a country. The Hamas charter calls for the extermination of Jews. And the Hamas hate marches in Ontario, they want to protest Jews. Here's some footage of what that looked like. Our reporter David Menzies was there. There's also a citizen journalist named Karima Saad who was there with her cameraman. Here's some images from this protest at a synagogue, a Jewish synagogue. It's not an Israeli outpost. It's not a political outpost. Take a look at this.
No, he jumped at her. Please jump on the sidewalk. Just, yeah, thank you.
Sidewalk, please. Sidewalk, please.
As you can see, there's a crossover between Islamist extremists and Antifa. There are some white, woke Antifa types there. One of the tactics that Antifa uses, I've seen it myself, is they have these extreme noisemakers. Not just a noisy, but extremely noisy, more than 100 decibels, the kind of thing that if it was put near you would cause temporary and, God forbid, personal deafness. And one of the regular protests there deployed that weapon, actually gave it to her child. Take a look at this from Karima Saad.
Palestine is not for sale.
Palestine is not for sale.
Danger, danger!
Jewish terrorists!
Danger, danger! Pay your rent?
Everybody knows what that is. It's not just a noisemaker. It is a weapon. It would be like shooting a laser pointer in someone's eyes. You don't need to punch someone to assault and batter them. You can assault and batter them with sound, with light, or with other things. And police saw this and, of course, did nothing. It reminds me of a few weeks ago when these same Hamas hate marches blocked off a Jewish neighborhood in Toronto. Again, nothing political there, just Jewish houses and synagogues, and Hamas literally blocked the streets. Oh, and police, they brought coffee for the Hamas protesters. Remember this?
They left. No one told them they can't come back, otherwise he would have said, okay, I understand.
Okay, I'll just ask. Just so... Sorry, it's the person with the vest.
Jihad?
Yeah, the guy in the yellow vest. How did you get coffee from the police?
We're not the police. Someone has brought it for us, but the police won't let them in. So the police are now becoming our little messengers between us. I don't know. I have no idea what's going on.
Again, credit to Karima Saad for that on-the-street video. I want to show you a couple of minutes now. The whole clip is 6 minutes. I'm not going to show the whole thing, but I'm going to show a fair bit of it. You'll watch this video, again, from Karima, who's there on the ground, which is interesting because... you know, she's pretty nonpartisan. I can't even tell which side she's on. I think she's Muslim and her videographer is Jewish. That's an interesting combination. And I think she does a pretty good job of just showing the story. And she's always there on the ground. And here she shows a woman on the pro-Hamas side hit a police officer. Have you ever done that in your life, hit a police officer? I don't recommend it. Here she hits a police officer. That happens around 17 seconds into this video. And they arrest her. They put hands on her. They say things that are not audible, but she's clearly being arrested. But the mob of pro-Hamas protesters spills out onto the street. Now, if that was you or me, we'd be getting jaywalking tickets. And they literally pull her away from the police and free her just with sheer physical force. And the police just let that happen. She assaulted police, she was arrested by police, and the Hamas thugs pull her away, and the police sort of say, oh, well, here, take a look. Let's play a few minutes of this.
Please, 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 please.
You have no right to come. They're spitting on us. Yo, they're spitting on us.
Do you have any ID on you?
Bro, you have no right to touch her.
Have you ever seen such a thing in Canada? How about with the truckers? Well, you saw more violence towards police there than you did during the entire trucker convoy. Not a single trucker assaulted a single police officer ever. You just saw more violence in that one Hamas hate march than in all the truckers combined. And yet the reaction when it was truckers was riot squads, martial law, jailing Tamara Leach and Arthur Pavlovsky and the like. Absolute baton swinging thuggery from police against peaceful protests against vaccine mandates. But you have Hamas hate marches, hit a cop and no problem. Now, there was an arrest made, and it's a very unfortunate incident, which I am opposed to. A man who's apparently Jewish, although I understand he may be from Russia, was charged with assault, and he was improperly using a nail gun, like a construction tool. I'm not sure if he actually fired a nail at people, but he was wielding the gun and there was some fisticuffs. Here, take a quick look at this. You can see the guy with the nail gun.
Every fucking Palestinian will die! Every fucking Palestinian!
Huh? You wanna fucking go, bitch?
You need to calm down and step back.
You want a fucking...
You have a fucking problem?
Huh?
You have a problem?
You fucking...
You have a fucking... Don't you fucking touch me, bitch. Don't you fucking touch me.
And you shot it at another guy.
You piece of shit.
Now, I think, judging by his name, he's Jewish. And obviously, I'm against people using nail guns at all for violence. Nail guns are a construction tool. It would be against people hitting someone with a hammer. It's morally wrong to shoot someone with a nail gun. If I have to say it, there I've said it. And from a pragmatic and practical point of view, putting aside morality, it obviously undermines your cause to use a nail gun, because now you're the violent one, even though these were Hamas hate marches. To respond with a nail gun is inappropriate morally and politically. He was charged, and I'm sure he'll be prosecuted, and, you know, I don't know if he'll be convicted, but the video doesn't look great. But why did that happen? Why would some, if I understand correctly, he was just a construction guy. I understand he was, he may have even been swarmed. Someone told me that happened, but I haven't seen the videotape. Why would he feel the need to use a nail gun? I'm not going to get into his mind. I have no idea. Again, I say that using a nail gun is wrong, but perhaps it was a frustration, a reaction to the fact that police obviously and simply don't give a damn anymore about Jews or Jewish places. In Canada, we've seen Molotov cocktails thrown at schools and synagogues. We've seen shots fired at schools and synagogues. I think of, for example, in Montreal. I see thousands of people chanting for a final solution, Intifada Revolution, from the river to the sea. I see posters like the placard we saw when Giorgio Meloni was in town of machine guns. Remember this girl that David Menzies saw in Mississauga with AK-47 earrings and an AK-47 shirt. Remember her?
Hamas is not a terrorist group.
Oh, it isn't, ma'am.
First of all, Hamas is not a terrorist group.
What is it, like a motorcycle club?
It is a resistance that has been fuming for 75 years of colonialism, of occupation, of murder, of rape, of little children, of women. That's what they are. They are resistance.
Do you think Canada is a colonialist country too?
Everything that they do is justified.
Including what happened last week?
Every single thing they have done is justified.
Now, I don't know if it's against the law to wear AK-47 earrings. I don't think it is. I don't think it is against the law to say you like Hamas. I don't think it is, and I don't think it should be. But when you start to actually support, facilitate, instruct, or harbor terrorist groups, well, that could be against the law. The criminal code says so. And we were told for years that we need to crack down on hate speech. It's section 318 and 319 of our criminal code, including Holocaust denial or calling for genocide. That actually is against the law right now. That's not just stuff that Trudeau wants to bring in the Online Harms Act. None of these people chanting for the death of Jews have been charged with this at all. You know, I asked Douglas Murray, the great British commentator, how things are for British Jews. I said, it's just still safe for British Jews? Here's the answer he gave me. Here, take a look at this and listen to his answer also when he talks about the hate marches going on every week in the UK. Take a look at this for a second.
Is Britain still safe for Jews?
Yes, but it's tense. It's very tense. I mean, if there's a march every Saturday where there are people calling for your death and destruction, you can't say that that's a happy society. And it wouldn't be put up with for any other group. If there were marches in the centre of London every week where there were some people, even just some people, saying that we should eradicate everyone who's black, that march would be stopped. There would not be a second march or a third. And the people who would be on the first march, once they knew what they were involved with, would not go back on the second week if they were decent people. So there's a not even a double standard, a triple standard going on.
Did you hear his point about the marches? He made a good point. He said, like, if there were a march, let's say there was a march against open borders immigration, both the UK and Canada overwhelmed with that. If there was a march and there was lots of KKK hoods and people with KKK flags chanting racist things toward black people, if you saw that, you would probably disassociate yourself from it and not go next week when they would do it again and again and again. And Douglas Murray's point is those marches may not be criminal in themselves. And I think the same thing can be said about the marches in Canada. We saw some law-breaking, assaulting a cop, trespass, etc. Of course, the firebombs and the shootings are against the law. But even if actual laws aren't being broken, who would go to a march that week after week indulged in such blatant racism? And if you have trouble imagining it, imagine if, you know, a white person with a white Klan hood went and, let's say, burned a cross outside a black church and chanted and held up, you know, atrocious signs showing a lynching or something and used the N-word and said atrocious things. Everyone would be shocked. Anyone who went to that protest would be ashamed of themselves. It would be denounced. And frankly, I think police would probably arrest those people for some sort of hate crime. But that's not the case in Canada when the Jews are the target, is it? And I think people see that there's a double standard here. The mayor of Vaughan, which is the city north of Toronto where this happened, he's a former liberal named Del Duca is his last name. And he did this series of tweets about the protesters. And he said he wants there to be calm and he wants there to be order. He never says he wants the racist protesters to stop. He never said that. I guess he's afraid of the pro-Hamas marchers. Maybe he has done the math, and there's just not enough Jews in Vaughan for him to take their side. Like Trudeau, he's done the math, and he knows there's about five times as many, or 10 times, almost 10 times as many Muslims in Canada as there are Jews. And, you know, if some of them are a bit racist, well, they each have a vote. But compare what he said there about, hey, guys, you know, be calm and order. Compare that to what he said when it was truckers in Ottawa and elsewhere. Take a look at this video from the same mayor, Del Duca, a couple years ago.
I'm outlining three steps that I believe Doug Ford should be taking right now urgently. I think that we need to declare a provincial state of emergency. This is how serious the situation is. I'll call it protesters or the protest organizers to be on the hook for paying the policing costs that are mounting each and every single day. That prosecutors here in the province of Ontario would use every tool in their toolkit, every tool available, to make sure that a strong message was being sent, including the seizing or the forfeiture of property, including trucks. It's time for these occupiers to go home.
Do you see the difference there? He thinks that there should be a police crackdown on peaceful truckers, but he doesn't call for a crackdown on the Hamas hate marches. Police arrest anyone who, you know, had a truck or under the Emergencies Act, or remember that guy in Toronto who had the smoked meat company? They brought in riot horses by the dozen. That's for peaceful protesters, but for people raging against Jews, masks, holding terrorist flags and saying from the river to the sea, oh, no, no, don't touch them. In fact, they're an important voting bloc. Let's bring them coffee, police say. That's called two-tier policing. And I'm afraid that if the Jews of Canada keep on seeing this two-tier policing, keep seeing violent people literally punching cops and getting away with it, see that outside their synagogues and schools, and see that the police don't give a damn and the politicians don't either, I hate to say it, you probably will see more people like that carpenter picking up his nail gun. I don't recommend it. I don't want it. I don't endorse it. I don't support it. But if people can't rely on the police to be neutral enforcers of the law, and if they can't rely on politicians to speak with moral clarity, they're probably going to keep looking for answers elsewhere, and that is not a good thing. Stay with us for more. In New Zealand, Maori, of course, are the indigenous peoples there. And that is the traditional haka. We got to know that haka when Avi Yamini and myself and other rebels went to New Zealand for Avi's book launch. They actually did a haka for Avi. Can I show you that? Take a look. Well, we got to know an incredible collection of people from the Maori community, led by their senior pastor, Brian Temeke, who is so freedom-oriented, it's amazing. He resisted closing his churches during the lockdowns. And look at him stand for Israel, because he sees in Israel that they are the indigenous people of the land, just as the Maori are in New Zealand. And I was delighted to see my friend Barbara Kay had a column in the National Post entitled, Israel, a True Indigenous Success Story. And the subheadline, New Zealand's Maoris and other indigenous groups support Jewish reclamation of their homeland. And that was published in the National Post about a week and a half ago. Joining me now via Skype is our friend Barbara Kay. Barbara, great to see you again.
Same here, Ezra. It's been a few months, I think.
Well, it's nice to have you back. You know, a lot of people don't think of Jews as being indigenous. In fact, in much of the world, Jews are in exile, the wandering Jew. I mean, Jews are a minority everywhere, but in the Holy Land, the land of the Bible, that's where the Jews started. That's where this whole Jewish business started. And from that point of view, Jews absolutely are the indigenous people there. Judaism predates both Christianity and Islam by thousands of years.
That's true. They are the only extant people. You know, people often say, oh, well, the Canaanites were there first. They may have been, but the Canaanites were assimilated into the Jews, the Jewish people, or they fled, or they had a war, whatever. The Jews are the only extant people for whom that land is sacred. And that's usually the short answer to what constitutes indigeneity. You know, progressive people have a lot of trouble absorbing the idea, two ideas. One, that you can be a white person and still belong to an indigenous people because they associate all white people with imperialism and oppression. And the second thing is it's hard for them to imagine an indigenous people that are also dominant in the land, that they have actually achieved reclamation, that they have achieved their return and have become sovereign, which is the dream of many other indigenous people like the Kurds and many other people. And by the way, the Kurds, I think, really deserve their own, I mean, they really deserve to be a nation, but that's another the topic for another day. Anyways, yes, but we do. The Jews do strike all, they tick off all the boxes that apply to indigenous as applied to other people who we do call indigenous.
Well, I mean, the British Empire was at its peak probably on the eve of the First World War. And after that, the British empire began to fragment a little bit, and that was greatly hastened after the Second World War. So Israel is in the same category as several dozen countries that were decolonized when the United Kingdom withdrew. Now, Israel had been colonized over the years. It had been colonized by the Persians, colonized by the Turks, colonized by the British. And then when the British decolonized, they properly gave the land back to the original people. Actually, they agreed to give it back, part of it to the Jews and part of it to the Arabs. The proposal the United Nations proposed was that there would be two countries birthed there, but the Palestinians didn't attack the Jewish state. But I guess through the, you know, the decolonization process, Israel is just like every other decolonized country. I mean, it's literally the same.
Yeah. After the war was over, the First World War, 23 new nations came out in the Middle East that were kind of decolonized, and the 22 of them were Arab and one was Jewish. And nobody ever questions the legitimacy of all the 22 Arab nations that were created. Jordan is a new nation, was a new nation, same time as Israel. Syria was new. Lebanon, Egypt is an ancient country and has always been there. But a lot of the countries surrounding Israel became nations at the same time as Israel did. And nobody's ever questioned their legitimacy, only Israel's.
You know, we really learn so little history these days. I think that most kids at college, if you were to ask them about slavery, they would only know one slavery story, which is slavery in the United States South, that it was white slave owners and black slaves. I don't think that 1 in 10 college kids these days would know that slavery has occurred on every continent, and that in most cases, slave owners, because in most cases people are not white, in most cases slave owners are not white, whether it's China or Arabia or the Middle East or Africa. I think the only slavery we've been taught about is the U.S. slavery, which, by the way, they fought the Civil War over, the most costly war that country ever fought.
You're absolutely right. There is slavery still being practiced in some countries today. Their inability to see evil in any other group other than white people tells me that it's not slavery that they think is evil. It's white people. And if they can't admit that slavery is something that was also practiced amongst indigenous peoples in North America and South America. So before white people ever came to these lands, It's an evil practice, but it has been practiced just about everywhere. It was more the norm than not until the last couple of hundred years. And yes, the whites practiced slavery, but whites were in the forefront of the fight to abolish it.
There was no other country that went to the same lengths that the United Kingdom did, not just exactly. To abolish slavery, but to then eradicate it for half a century, the West Africa Squadron of the Royal Navy, for mm-hmm. purely altruistic reasons. I mean, I suppose there were geopolitical rivalries too, but they tracked down, captured, and freed hundreds of slave ships, countless thousands of slaves. Like for 50 years, the British Navy didn't just ban slavery, it eradicated. It was like the global anti-slavery cop. I don't know any other country in history that did that. The Americans suffered a greater loss in practically almost all their wars combined to liberate the country from the stain of slavery. I don't know. I just think that you're right. It's about a self, it's like that necrotizing fasciitis, you know, that unusual disease, that flesh-eating disease. Self-loathing, the woke mind virus of self-loathing is like necrotizing fasciitis. And I think young white kids are taught, we are a unique evil. We did things unique in all history when slavery goes back since the dawn of time. When slavery was banned in Canada, by the way, the greatest number of slaves was held by other indigenous bands, as you correctly point out. Mm-hmm. Indigenous on indigenous slave trading and slave raiding was far more numerous in Canada than the handful of black slaves that were in this country at the time. Just, I mean, I'm that's part of the ignorance behind the changing of the name Dufferin Dundas for the Young Dundas Square in Ontario. Sorry, I'm going on too much. Back to you.
No. I mean, listen, this is it. It's very difficult to deal to have a conversation about this with people who see the world so much in black and white, literally and figuratively. Where there can only be where evil and good are parceled out according to your identity. So it then becomes a kind of crime to indict, to even say, well, you know, Indigenous people weren't perfect either. No people has ever been perfect. And it doesn't matter what color you are. As a matter of fact, I mentioned before that it's very hard for progressives to consider that white people, as part of the Jewish people, can also be considered indigenous because of their heritage. They also don't understand that half of Israel is brown people because half of the Jewish people come from Arab lands where they were for hundreds, in some places, thousands of years as well. They predate Islam in certain countries, you know, in Egypt and Iraq and other places. They can't fathom that Arabs and Sephardic Jews or Mizrahi Jews are basically indistinguishable in terms of the way they present their skin color. That's very hard for them to understand because they understand that if you have that skin color, then you're a good person. You're an innocent person. So, how can you be both Jewish and an Israeli and also innocent? Very hard for them to process that.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, if anyone's ever visited Israel, I think there's a lot of things that surprise them. But one of them is the different colors of Jews. I mean, there are black Jews from Ethiopia. Yeah. There are brown Jews from Arabia and from Persia. And you're right. It really is a mixing and melting pot. And by the way, there's foreigners there too. Some of the people who were murdered and kidnapped on October 7th weren't even Jews at all. They were Arabs. They were foreigners in Israel. Hey, let's get back to your column. I went on a bit of a tangent there talking about slavery around the world. I mean, by the way, we think of the word Baltimore as a city in Maryland, but Baltimore was a town in Ireland where the entire town was kidnapped and turned into slaves by Arab raiders who raided Ireland for white slaves and brought
them
back.
When was this? I never heard of that. I never heard that story.
It's a historical fact. That's where the original
Baltimore is. I believe you. This is new to me. That's
Well, I mean, if the Barbary pirates, if you know that ancient that's a couple hundred years old, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, that's the battle hymn of the Republic. What was the American Navy doing in the shores of Tripoli? Like, look,
I knew about that. I knew about those adventures. I didn't realize that they had come as far north as Ireland.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, there were raids. Absolutely. So, I mean, the American Navy was against pirates, and some of the things these pirates traded on was slaves. All right. Let's get back to your column, Israel, a true indigenous success story. They're trying to destroy Israel's indigenous claim because they want to replace Israel. There's, as you mentioned, there's dozens of Arab countries, even more Muslim countries. Mm. If you look at a map, Israel's a tiny little sliver. I don't think it's really about land. I don't think it's really about the Palestinian people, who are ethnically the same as Arabs. Linguistically, they speak Arabic. Religiously, most of them are Muslim. Some are Christian. I don't think it's about the Palestinians. I think it's about getting Israel. I don't think it's a pro-Palestinian movement. I think it's an anti-Jewish movement. What do you think of that?
It is. It is. It's anti-Jewish, and it's actually pro-Hamas, which is even to compound the gravity of the hatred. They are actually marching and screaming in favor of a known terrorist organization whose charter calls for the eradication of Jews worldwide, but certainly in Israel, and who will never be satisfied. It never was about statehood for Hamas. It was always about Islamist triumphalism, in that respect, not so very different from ISIS and Al Qaeda and other caliphate restoring or wanting to restore the caliphate. These Islamic supremacist movements. That's what they are. And Hamas is one.
You know, over the last few weeks, we've seen just atrocious hate marches on the streets, flying the flags of terrorist group. Just the other day, when Giorgia Meloni, the leader of Italy, was in town to meet with Trudeau, there were protesters outside with flags with machine guns on them. Like when you call for intifada, which is an Arabic word for a violent uprising, when you have machine guns as your symbol, when you're literally flying the flags of terrorist groups, you're not hiding a lot. You're not keeping a lot close to your chest. And I saw a liberal MP, Marco Mendicino, tweet over the weekend, "Do you think you're going to persuade people with this? You're not." He doesn't get it. They're not trying to persuade anyone. They're trying to terrify people, and they're trying to reset the frame of what's normal. They're trying to normalize being terrorized and terrified and who's dominant and who can resist the police.
Well, they're doing a good job of dominating, because they have gotten several events shut down that should not have been shut down, even if they had to call out, you know, the army to let it go forward. These tactics of shutting down events because they're afraid of violent protest is really stupid. All they're doing is encouraging more of it.
It's stupid on the part of the authorities, but it's brilliant on the part of the numbers of these marches. Sometimes the marches in Canada have mustered more than 10,000 people, and I find that worrying. But it's mainly a cadre of old-fashioned left-wing woke, white kids. And then a number of new immigrants, typically from Muslim countries. And it's so clearly the fingerprints, and we know this from Global News and other reports, that there's 700 Iranian agents in Canada who were basically paid organizers for this stuff. They always were, with Al-Quds Day, as they called it. But they're not trying to persuade anybody. They're trying to say, we're the new boss in town. This is the new normal. Jews should expect to be denounced. And they're trying to encourage people to move the Overton window, to radicalize society, to demoralize the opponents, to terrify Jews, drive them out, to basically do to Canada what happened the other day in Rochdale, UK, when George Galloway ran on a purely pro-Gaza campaign. Here's a clip of him saying the victory was for Gaza. Take a look.
Keir Starmer, this is for Gaza. You have paid and you will pay a high price for the role that you have played in enabling, encouraging, and covering for the catastrophe presently going on in occupied Palestine in the Gaza Strip.
So there's a white guy who claims he's converted to Islam. I'm not sure if he has. Basically saying...
Well, he might as well, because he's been a friend to Hamas and Hezbollah for many, many years.
He embraces the leadership of those terrorist groups.
He absolutely is all in for these groups. You mentioned the Iranian agents here. In Iran itself, by the way, there's not a whole lot of protest against Israel at all. And those there are have been, you know, organized by the regime. Iranians themselves are not hostile to Jews, not particularly, or not many of them. And a lot of them are actually quite friendly in their thoughts to Israel. So they're unlike many other Muslim Middle Eastern countries. They're much more sophisticated in their thinking about Israel and Jews.
Well, and Persians in Canada are often at Jewish events against the terrorists. I should note that the largest street protest in the world, there was a large one in Turkey, I'll grant you that. But other than that once, the weekly or monthly protests, hate mm-hmm. marches in London, England, are far yeah. larger than anything in the Arab world. There's no rallies in Cairo or Damascus right. or Dubai or Abu Dhabi or Riyadh. They're just not. It's the Western agitators, which are a combination of domestic leftists and foreign foreign instruments of Iran or others. I think they're using us as some sort of weird laboratory, and I hate the fact that no one in authority is pushing back. I don't know if you saw over the weekend some of the crazy antics outside a Jewish synagogue in Toronto. Like, they're not mm-hmm. even pretending. It's yeah. just about Israel. They're having protests at Jewish synagogues now, Barbara.
Yeah, you notice October 7th, the gloves came right off. All that fig leaf stuff about, no, we're not anti-Semitic. We're just critics of Israel. That's all by the board now. It's gone. And this is what's so demoralizing to Jews here, the shock of the open anti-Semitism. You know, we don't serve Jews. Get out. You know, Jews, Jews, Zionists, they make no pretense of trying to distinguish at all. And they feel the freedom. They feel the freedom to just scream their hatred of Jews. And there's no leadership here, or one that feels a lack of leadership in combating that. It's a little creepy. And I think a lot of Jews have this terrible feeling of dread that this is possibly going to escalate, and that the backup from our government, it's just not as strong. It's not as reassuring as it should be. They don't have our back in a way that, you know.
Part of these weekly dominance pageants are to test the limits, to see how far they can go. Can we chant from the river to the sea? Can we chant there's only one solution, Intifada revolution? So they're talking about a final solution. They're talking about a violent uprising. Every week they're seeing how far they can go. And so far the answer is there's no limit. Let's see if we can stop Trudeau from meeting with a G7 leader, Giorgio Meloni. Check. Yeah, no problem. We got that. I mean, compare the police reaction to the trucker convoy or the anti-vax protesters, straight to jail, batons, riot horses. But you're literally masked, flying Hamas flags, waving Hamas placards, and they'll cancel a G7 meeting. I don't think that's an accident. I think that it's a decision. People look at Justin Trudeau for guidance. He has never condemned these hate marches. He gives so much moral support to Hamas, they've literally put out a thank you video. I think that Canada has a lot further to fall before Trudeau is replaced as prime minister, which I hope will be soon. Last word to you, Barbara. I mean, it was a very interesting article you wrote about Israel being indigenous people, but that's an academic argument, an intellectual argument, a historical argument. I don't think that's where the battlefield is. I think the battlefield here is raw hatred, and it's foreign manipulation foreign funded. Well, I agree with you
that there's this very visceral side to this situation, and my column did seem as if it was quite academic in a way, but I think it's warranted because it starts in the universities, and it starts with professors giving students reasons to justify their hatred of Israel. Right. And because indigenous peoples here are so revered and sanctified, and indigeneity is one of those protected ideas that it's a kind of holy thing to be indigenous. And by encouraging indigenous identification with Palestinians rather than with Jews, it gives ammunition for these students to say, well, of course we're on the Palestinian side.
Right.
That's, you know,
right.
It's the same as we're on the side of Indigenous people in Canada. We're on the side of all Indigenous people. And the more they identify the Palestinians as the oppressed people of that region. So I think attacking that idea is very important because they shouldn't get away with it. And it's good to know that there is this coalition of Indigenous peoples support for Israel in various parts of the world, especially in the South Pacific, New Zealand and other islands in the South Pacific. And I did want to say there is support amongst certain Indigenous peoples in Canada, too. And there were a couple of other articles after October 7th where some Indigenous people in Canada, Chris Sankey and Karen Restoul, who very strongly came out and said, do not bunch us together with the Palestinians because it looks like we're endorsing these atrocities, that we're endorsing a kind of resistance that is violence-based. We don't do that.
Wow.
We are opposed to that, but they are not, they are few amongst many voices. And I did note that Karen Restoul, who was a member of the Dokis First Nation, she was out there with her name signing a letter to Foreign Affairs Minister Melanie Joly to say this, but she noted that the other people that signed that were with her on this campaign to detach from this movement amongst other Indigenous leaders to identify with Palestine would not sign their names because they were afraid of blowback from the larger groups. I think we have to keep this academic side mm-hmm. to the fore just as much as we have to fight the actual violence and the actual protesting and all of that.
Great points. Well, it's nice to catch up with you. The article is called Israel, A True Indigenous Success Story, and it was in the National Post on February 24th. Thanks again, Barbara. Great to see you.
Thanks for having me, Ezra.
Stay with us. More ahead. Hey, welcome back. Your letters to me. A 60-year-old rock star says this about the CBC getting a pay raise from taxpayers. Purchasing favoritism should be illegal. Well, welcome to Canada, where not just the CBC, but every newspaper's journalist are on the payroll too. Craig Wiss says, we have to cancel Disney Plus, and the money we save goes to pay the carbon tax on April 1st. Isn't that the truth? What a disgraceful comment that was from Chrystia Freeland when she says, oh, just cancel Disney Plus. Yeah, like you've ever canceled anything. Shadi C says, about 12 years ago, I planned to start a new life in Canada after finishing university. Now, every time I hear about what's happening in Canada, I congratulate myself for not going through with that. Without a doubt, that would have been the worst mistake of my life. Well, look, I've lived in Canada my whole life. My parents, my grandparents, my great-grandparents came here in 1903. It's a pretty great country. There's a lot of wonderful things to it. And there's a lot of wonderful things in Canada that have nothing to do with the government. There's a lot of things in Canada that have nothing to do with the government. But that said, they've made everything they touch worse. And we do have to turn it around because it is getting awful, whether it's mundane things like traffic, or serious things like affordability of food and housing and fuel, or more terrifying things like crime waves, violence, and now the specter of terrorism. Canada has more problems now than we have in almost a century. I hope we're up to fix it. When I look at polls, I'm encouraged. People are sick of Justin Trudeau. But I don't know if our system is accurately reflecting that. Hopefully we'll be freer and happier in the future. That's our show for today. Until tomorrow, on behalf of all of us here at Rebel World Headquarters, to you at home, good night, and keep fighting for freedom.